We also done something with Virgil, who was our patron before he died. And basically he created these t-shirts that said, I support Black education.
Yeah. I was listening to Burna Boy's Monsters You Made. And it was also at the time of NSARS. I just thought this would be a great resource for young people trying to figure out what this whole NSARS commotion is, but also studying, you know, neoliberalism in A-level politics or something, to put two and two together through the arts.
Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I do believe that music is a life force. Mm. And
you're speaking for me when you say that. Well, I can see you listening to Nux.
Yeah.
Because Nux can get a bit sexy sometimes. SL.
What's going on, everybody? This is the 10th and final episode of Sounds of Black Britain. We've been on a journey through a whole heap of styles and sounds that have come together to help make the UK, arguably, black music's most innovative hub. In our final show of the series, we'll be looking at what we've learned about the past, present, and future of black music in Great Britain and beyond. I'm Julie Adenuga, and this is Sounds of Black Britain. Deep dive discussions into the musical history of Black Britain. Afrobeat, hip hop, lovers rock, jungle, UK garage, grime, Afro swing. With its fusion of Caribbean, African, and American sounds, all served with a UK twist, Britain can claim to be Black music's most innovative hub. This is Sounds of Black Britain. Across this series, we've spoken to some of the biggest and brightest names in Black British music. Shaka, Alakai Harley, J5, Mobile, Estelle, Tiana Major 9, Dennis Bovell, DJ Target, DEE, Ruben James, Omar, Chip, Cookie Price, Novelist, Elijah, Frisco, and General Levy. These legends have given us their insights into the sounds they helped create. Sounds that propelled Black British music to global success. This series is all about saluting and celebrating this influence, while opening the ears and minds of a new generation to the greatness of those that came before them, and how music can be such an amazing tool for learning. Joining me to discuss the power and influence of Black British music is Lavinia Stennett, the founder of The Black Curriculum, alongside Adi Tadasi, who helped develop this podcast idea.
So the first time I saw The Black Curriculum, I think it was an Instagram page.
Yeah.
It was around the time when a lot of things were being called the Black something. So there was Black-owned pages where it was about the businesses that are Black-owned. Also, another thing that happened was a lot of it was a mix between UK and US.
Yes.
So take us back to the beginning of The Black Curriculum and why it was unique and why it was important for it to start up. I don't know who that question. Who wants to take the question?
Yeah, Lavinia, go ahead. So Black Curriculum started in New Zealand. So it's very, very different from the context of which these Black businesses were developed specifically in the period of like Black Lives Matter.
Mm.
So yeah, I was at SOAS studying African studies. And then there was like an opportunity to go to New Zealand to learn whatever you wanted to learn. So I chose to go to the University of Waikato to learn Maori culture, which is like the indigenous people.
Right.
And like just being there, seeing how passionate they were about their history and also open about colonialism. I was like, we need the same thing here. Like we have it in bits, but we have to have something that's national, that takes up space. And so, yeah, the idea came to me in New Zealand to call it the Black Curriculum for Black people. And then that was 2018.
Yeah.
And in 2019, yeah, founded it. We started with like a curriculum and just went into schools. So yeah.
Why is it called the Black Curriculum? What specifically makes it different to a brand or a company that is supporting Black culture or, you know, Black whatever it is, heritage? Why the curriculum?
Because education is the start of everything. I think it's the... All right, so for us as people, as Black people, I know that my experience in school was one where I wasn't seen. My humanity was denied. And sometimes you are seen, but for the wrong reasons. I feel like education is where like things can either go really well or really wrong. And I feel like that defines your life. So to some extent. So in terms of the Black curriculum, it's about education. It's about grounding young people in a way where they can actually see themselves, be equipped with a sense of identity and belonging that resonates with them in their entirety. So they don't have to fake being someone else in school or, you know, like be penalized for being themselves. So I think what makes us different is that it is about education. It's about embedding Black history in the curriculum so that, yeah, it starts there and then you take your life wherever.
Throughout this wrap-up edition, we'll be looking at some of the standout moments from across the series and what they tell us about the past, present and future of Black British music and culture.
Tell us, in the time that it's been since you founded it and it's been something that people can be a part of, you know, has a podcast in itself, there's so much that has happened. Just give us some of the good things that have happened that makes you think, I'm so happy I thought of this and I'm so happy that I put energy into the Black curriculum.
All right, so the first scenario was when we ran a session in SOAS, actually back where it started.
Yeah.
And it was the first springboard session, and this young boy, he was like 11 years old, he was just so quiet in the class. But then after, he was like, oh, miss, that was so amazing. And then like his mum DM'd us like 3 weeks later. Wow. And she was like, oh, my son's actually started a Black History book club because of the session. And I was like, well, that's the impact we wanted to make.
Yeah.
So I feel like that. We've also done a collaboration with Lush last year, which was around kind of just ensuring that everybody knew about aspects of Black British history. Addy had a hand in that as well. We also done something with Virgil, who was our patron before he died. And basically he created these t-shirts that said, I support Black education.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, it's for Black curriculum. I just feel like it's about a wider narrative and just circumnavigating the government. And also we've done a campaign that was targeted to Gavin Williamson that garnered 200,000 responses. So,
some stuff's happened.
Yeah, stuff. You know,
it's been okay. Yeah, still lots to do, but you know,
yeah.
It's incredible. I'm happy that we are sitting down talking about this. Obviously, we've been making the Sounds of Black Britain podcast for you guys to listen to. And there has been loads of stuff that we've covered. But it's great to hear from you guys because you are the voices and the reason behind the podcast. So I know it's hard to toot your own horn and blow your own trumpet. But Addy, I would love to hear from you. I was going to say, why me? But why everything? Why all the people that you asked to be on the podcast? Why did you ask for me to host it? Why? What was the importance of this podcast for you?
Right. So I'm going to take it back to the beginning, ideation.
Yeah.
Me personally, I've always been into the arts. So I did history and development studies at uni, but I've always found a way to find intersections with arts, culture, popular culture, historical culture, whatever it is. And so I was listening to Burna Boy's Monsters You Made, and it was also at the time of NSARS. And, you know, the movement that was going on online, the discussion. And I was watching the music video to the Burna Boy song. From the set design, from the lyrics, from the energy that was coming from it, from, like, the metaphors from the fire, like, the bills, dollar bills going on fire, the references to education and what they didn't learn in school. I just thought this would be a great resource for young people trying to figure out what this whole NSARS commotion is, but also studying, you know, neoliberalism in A-level politics or something, to put two and two together through the arts.
Mm.
So for me, I was like, if I was sat there learning about Thatcher's England, you know, A-level history or GCSE history, and I wanted to know what the social implications of her policies meant in school, it would have been a lot more easier to be able to relate it to how that impacted music underground,
right,
how that impacted youth culture. And so I just thought, this is, we at the Black curriculum, we are arts focused and arts based. So why don't we incorporate sort of that storytelling narrative of music in bettering our understanding of the world around us? Because like you asked Lavinia about what education is, what the curriculum is, I think we're all in the school of life. Like, education in schools is one thing, but I think when you intersect the arts, it becomes a school of life more generally.
Mm-hmm.
It's like whether it's your commute to school on the bus, or what you're chatting about with your friends at lunchtime, or your journey home, or what you have for dinner, you're constantly consuming life and you're always learning. So if music is a part of that learning experience for you, then why don't we channel that into something that gets examined, that can be, you know, merited for? So I, you know, we got together, pitched it to Lavinia and the team. They were like, yeah, let's go. Had a chat with Spotify. They also loved it. Also ended up being a really great opportunity to work with other Black-owned production companies. So our production team is also Black-owned.
Yeah.
And then we came to the discussion of a host. I was like, right, I need someone who has energy, who is already in this scene, who loves music, And then I was watching your top five, the Wizkid one. Or the Jay Huss one, one of them. I think it was the Jay Huss one.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, Julian needs to come on this one. So I just thought this would be a perfect match. And then I suggested it to the team. And then I remember I came to the team call. I was like, we've got Julie. We've got Julie.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Oh, I was only joking when I was like, why did you want me? But now I'm happy that I asked.
Because I just thought it would be the perfect match just for matching the vibe of the guests, but also to sort of drive that conversation. Mm. So that's, Burna Boy shout out wherever you are.
Shout out to Burna Boy, always. We love you. I was going to say, before that moment, did you see a lot of, and this is to both of you, Lavinia and Addy, did you see a lot of people, a lot of Black British people talking about Black British history? What were the examples that you saw? Because I'm sure you would have had a look around and said, has this idea been done before? Mm. Were there any good examples for you, or was it the lack of that made it even more important to make the podcast?
So I said a quote last week at our third birthday party.
Don't worry, no, we weren't there, so you can say it again.
I'm gonna say it now.
It didn't happen. We're going to edit that bit out. This is her saying it for the first time.
It's actually not my quote, but it's... It's Audre Lorde in her book, The Master's Tools Don't Dismantle the Master's House. She basically says there's no new ideas.
No, wait, come back. I need you to go slower because the name of the book is important.
All right, so The Master's Tools Will Not Dismantle the Master's House.
Right.
So on page 5, she basically says...
What?
She basically says...
Nah, Lavinia. What? How do you know what page it's on?
My memory is like... Never mind.
This is deep. What happens on page 10? How many pages are there? This is so exciting. No, go on. Sorry.
So she basically says there's no new ideas. There's only new ways to make them felt. Mm. And that resonated so deeply because the Black curriculum is not new. So back in 1980, you had a project called ASAR, which was similar to Black curriculum, still kind of trying to get students to see themselves in a new identity, root themselves in a sense of belonging, but it was resource-based and it was going around the UK as well. And that was not in the time of any social media. He was also the founder of the Black Cultural Archives, Len Garrison. So I feel like in terms of what we were doing is, you have the Saturday School movement, you have like walking tours by Tony Warner. And at SOAS, I think because of the societies that I was involved in, we were well connected with what already was happening in previous generations. Mm. And so I think it just gave us the fuel, right, but also the kind of like structure as to see how it could be done. Right. But yeah, it's not new. There's people out there who've been doing it and are doing it still. So
yeah, just to echo that, actually, I was thinking a lot of the things that I consume that also help. So other than books, so for example, when I was thinking about this project, it was Casper Melville's It's a London Thing. Mm. That was great. I was like, whoa, there's so much that I have access to because I've been to uni, because I can buy these books that kids could be enjoying too. Mm. So it's not that it's not already been done. It's collecting everything that's already going on and making that packageable for schools, for teachers, for governors to then disseminate that to young people directly in educational environments. Yeah. Because what if someone doesn't have an iPhone and can't listen to this somewhere else? You know, it's about accessible education. So yeah, it's making it packageable. And giving that to young people sort of directly.
I think what makes us different as well, is that we use the arts to bridge that education. So it's not just like a boring history lesson, like, oh, this happened in 1966.
Shout out to Miss Vivian, my history teacher.
Done it. At least she had a good history teacher. So I think it's like, we can be, number one, we can be relevant to young people. Mm. We also are very passionate about history, but we use the arts and things that you see as relevant in your life to bring that together. So I feel like that's what made us, and we were prepared to do this on a larger scale. So it's not just like less focused on a specific set of students. It's for all students across the country. So
And Addy, you spoke about this briefly a second ago when you were talking about that life is about learning. Mm. And it's not just when you're in school, you're learning throughout wherever you are. And obviously arts is involved in that, because I can't tell you one person that I know in my life that grew up without listening to music. So why, from your perspective, Lavinia, do you feel that music and arts are an important resource when it comes to teaching young people? What is it about culture and music and media and entertainment that makes learning fun? Or maybe I'm putting words in your mouth. Why is it important?
Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I do believe that music is a life force. Mm. And
you're speaking for me when you say that.
Well, definitely. There's a certain community that understand, I think, and also in previous generations we've been able to express ourselves through music, but it has been seen as like a different category of education alternatively, and not as rigorous as the sciences. Mm. And that whole thing of like arts, and I just feel like no, they're all very equal.
Yes.
And they all have a place. So I think the value of learning through the arts and music is probably, it's underspoken, but it's something that I think we've been born into and has existed for many generations and is very powerful. Those modes of communicating are very powerful. 100%. So,
It's funny as well, in recording these podcasts and speaking to people, you can hear how important music is to them because everybody's experience, even though we're talking about historic events or, you know, we're trying to break down how certain genres of music came about and where they came from and where they originated from and lovers rock and this, everyone's experience is still are rooted around music, right? We're talking about history, but, you know, J5's telling me about, you know, living in Ghana and he was trying to make grime, but actually ended up accidentally being Afrobeats and now he's one of the biggest Afrobeat producers in the country. And so it's that in itself, you can hear without even having to answer the question almost, Lavinia, is like, music, for me, music is the greatest human creation. You can sit me, I was watching Jojo singing the runs on Beyonce, on a track on Beyonce's Renaissance. What was the song? I think it's the Pillow something so far. I can't remember what it's called. And just hearing her sing, I'm like, that's not normal to be able to do that. And I'm listening to her and I'm thinking, I love science. I think it's amazing that our thumbs can do this. I love it. But for someone to do runs like that, that's not normal. And I love more than anything knowing that there's different ways in which you can, you know, experience life. I love that my experience of life is rooted in music. I feel like it's the thing that makes me me. And I feel like a lot of people that I grew up around and know, that's what makes them them. And I can be anywhere in the world. If me and someone catch an eye in a club over a song, that'll be my best friend for the next 3 days whilst I'm on holiday. Because of music. And I think it's genius that we are in a position now where there are things like the Black curriculum that cater to people that feel like that. Because there are young people in schools that feel like that. In school, if my history teacher taught me things with a drum, I would know a lot more about 1066 Battle of Hastings. Like, if all of those things were incorporated, I would know a lot more. And I think people get that, but I can't stress enough how important it is that you guys do the work that you do, because it makes such a huge difference. And on top of that, these are people that we respect, right? We've had Shaka in the studio. Like, there's people that you've been listening to for X amount of years, or new artists that came through, Tiana Major Nine, you know, pioneers, and you got Estelle. It's like, I'm really happy that I've just been able to be a part of this and been able to. So thank you for asking me to just do this, because I'm so happy that I've been able to speak and learn loads of new stuff. I'm not going to put you guys on the spot and be like, what have you learned from the podcast? You know, it's like an exam at the end of the school year. What was the most important thing?
Maybe if you asked us to sing it,
what?
Then we could do that.
Oh, are you a singer, Lavinia?
I sing. Why did I do that?
I sing. Actually, I'm not here to promote the Black curriculum. I'm actually launching my music career.
Oh my God.
What is the track that for you defines music and Black British culture in the UK? No pressure. It can be anything. Remember, we've spoken about lovers rock, reggae, Afrobeats with an S, grime, hip hop. You know what I'm saying? We've covered a lot. R&B. So, and it doesn't have to be definitive. I always do this to people and I know that like 5 minutes later, they'll be like, actually, I want to change it.
That's a tough
question.
But
what for you comes to mind? What's one that sits at the front that, you know, when you hear it, if you're in your house with your family, whatever, that's the song that really sits in the Black British UK music box for you? Adi, I'm asking this question to you as well, so don't try and hide behind your mic.
The clocks are turning.
It's turning. I'm going to just say Dave's Jacqueline Hyde. It's a specific song that I think just deals with like the mental state of an experience that I can relate to. So whilst I feel like some people might not be like, oh, okay, like that's a very like specific song, for me it's
now,
like,
why don't you pick Location,
right? Burna Boy. But like for me, that's an experience that I feel like mentally I understand. And like, you know, you said about looking someone in the eye from across the room, like when he sang that, I was like, I see you. Do you get it? So I feel like for me that's Yeah,
Lavinia's about it.
I'm so done.
That's a great choice. Adi.
Oh, I'm going to go for the historical route. I'm going to say from the minute Empire Windrush docked, Lord Kitchener. I'm going to go for his historic. Yeah,
she said historic.
Lord Kitchener's song. Don't ask me the name because I've forgotten it now. But you know the calypso. He brought the calypso.
London is the place for
that's
me.
That's it. London is the place for me because I'm just going to think about
it. Do you remember
where
you were when you first heard that song or just even that style?
I thought you were going to say, do you remember where you were when he sang it? I
said, no.
I was nowhere to be seen.
Was this you young in your house growing up or what part of your life did this song enter into your world?
I think it was actually in an educational setting. Okay. I think it was researching for something, for an essay or something.
Mm.
Looking back now, I can see how like iconic that moment was because it was literally the migration of sound and people.
Yes.
Mm. And then that led on to the congregation of people, whether it be in blues parties, whether it be a carnival, whether it be, you know, in ciphers now, like all that movement and coming together of people. Mm-hmm. I can trace back to that moment of like, I mean, it's not the first time ever.
Of course.
Communities came here, but that was quite like an influx of cultures.
Black British music has made a real difference to African and Caribbean lives in the UK. And it's influenced the dance moves, slang, style, and understanding of people throughout Britain and beyond, whatever their ethnicity. So what might the future hold for our music? What's next for the culture and our understanding of it?
It's called Sounds of Black Britain, and we are talking about black people from the West Indies, from Africa, coming to the UK, settling in whatever way they did, whether, you know, it was the first time they came over or their parents grew up here or whatever it is. But every story involves all cultures.
Mm.
Carnival involves all cultures. Even though it started over here, it's now a space for all people.
Mm.
And it's something that I think we touched on briefly in the Carnival episode, but it's something I do want to bring up again, and I'd love to hear from your both of your perspectives of how you see that in the black curriculum. I'm not sure of many cultures that you can teach that include everybody, right? Outside of blackness, right? Okay. If you taught Pakistani culture, I don't know how much of that would include Nigerians or, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's always something that really is astounding to me is how much our culture, as much as we are marginalized, we still involve all people.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen elements of that as you're teaching or as you're, you know, as you're showing or bringing young people in that you're like, actually, we're called the Black Curriculum, but we are essentially speaking to all people?
Yeah. So when we started, there was a lot of people who used to just DM or like go on our YouTube, be like, black. So what do you mean by that? And it wasn't like an attack. It was more like, I want to get involved, but I need to know like if this actually does include me, because we think back to political blackness of the 80s, it included black people, Asians. And I think there is a certain generation still that kind of want to be a part of this, but resonate more with the idea of like inclusive. So black curriculum, just for clarity, is about black people. So people of African descent, in terms of what we're trying to do, it is really kind of thinking about our experience, but as it relates to the world of Britain.
Mm.
And naturally that does include like communities that have stood in solidarity with us. It does include white people. It does include people who are not even based in the UK anymore. Mm. So I feel like it's black history, but from a perspective of like the world.
Mm. Lavinia mentioned it at the beginning when she was sort of introing what we do. And at the core of it is instilling young people with identity and belonging, but it's also focusing on social cohesion.
Yeah.
We're not trying to push that individualistic mentality where it's, I've learnt this, I'm going to gatekeep it and go forth.
Right.
It's how do we then influence our society? How do we then make an impact within our local environment? So whether that be a young black kid learning something in school and feeling inspired and then sharing that with their friends who are also sort of in tune with the culture, with the music, with the heritage, whatever. Or if it's a young white student who learns this, who's already interested in this culture, but now has that he's got the armour, I guess, of that education. It's to ensure that the generation today, who already, like you said, have access to this culture, are equipped with the education and like don't lack. They're not ignorant to the fact that this is an accessible culture, but there's roots, there's history, there's homage that needs to be paid.
It's not a trending topic.
Right.
So you can wind up yourself at carnival, but you also understand the history behind it and also where that, like, why that history is so important today as well.
Are there any people that come to mind in the music and entertainment space that really do what they need to do to highlight things like the history of Black British culture or just Black Britain in general?
Yeah, Stormzy.
Yeah.
I would say Jamal Edwards as well.
Yeah.
He lived it, breathed it.
I mean, you mentioned Dave, but I feel like that's an obvious one as well.
Mm-hmm. They're all men.
It's good though. No, that's a, that. I know we're always like, come on, women. But at the same time, it's good to see young black men doing that.
Yeah,
because it's
sure.
something that we don't see a lot of young black men
for
doing.
Sure.
And I know for a fact, watching them be so proud about who they are and where they're from mm-hmm. immediately instills a lot into our young black boys in our community. And boys, men, grown men, mm-hmm. whatever it is. We had Dennis Bavel in the studio and he was quoting Stormzy lyrics.
Yeah.
Right? Oh. And I'm like, wow, this is insane.
It's like the rainfall.
It's like pre-gen, yeah. It's like, don't let the rain fall on your enemies because it might help them grow. And I'm like, how do you even know that lyric, first of all? I like that you're correcting it, but at the same time, I'm like, how do you know that? But I think it's important that we do see that from people, especially in music, especially in the positions that they're in.
Mm.
Would you like to see more of it? Do you feel like there's space for there to be more?
I feel like balance, because this is the whole thing, because we're so sort of, our ears are on the ground for what young people are wanting. Sometimes they, I don't know if you've, like, you know when young people are like, oh, like, I'm tired of, like,
preaching
the woke stuff, yes, and, like, yeah, the J. Cole yeah. of UK and all this stuff. Like, I feel like...
Shout out to J. Cole, man.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to J. Cole.
Sometimes he gets it, and I'm like, bruv, you caught straight, and it was
like,
so unfair, but
concert,
it's just like,
yeah.
that's become his thing now, isn't it?
They
poor
always
guy.
Say, like, always the UK J. Cole. I'm like, well, yeah, I see yeah. them. But it's like, I think it's about balance for young people, because they're trendy, they're on topic, so if they can bring that,
yeah.
but also sort of the balance of... being in the culture.
Yeah, because I feel like you can't force it either. Like,
absolutely.
You've got to believe in the source. Or you also got to recognise that where you are at in your journey, because it might not even be part of your artistry, but it might feature in some other part of your life that might speak for your music, but not explicitly. Like,
yes.
you won't say, I'm black and I'm proud. It just will come out in a different way. So I feel like people connect to your music in that sense as well. So yeah, I feel like I've named people who I'm like, have said explicitly, but there are others that I feel like live it as well.
If you are listening to this episode randomly, I don't know how you just got here and skipped everything else, or if you've only heard a couple, I really implore you to go and listen to all of them, because the biggest eye opener for me was really understanding, like Addy said, the history of these things. And like Lavinia said, not just winding up at carnival, which is a great thing to do, but not just doing that, understanding where that comes from and the context of it. And also that gives you a level of respect for that thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying you're going to wind differently, but you might. You know what I'm saying?
More if
you
consciously.
Been, yeah. It's a little bit, your waist might get a bit looser when you understand what is written. But it's like all of those things for me, more than anything, I'm like, I guess I didn't really understand how many genres of music and how much the styles of what I've literally grown up on that came before me and that is going to come after all come from us.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about Lovers Rock, Jungle, Garage, Grime, like, it's almost, it's quite like, wow.
Yeah.
I genuinely am like, wow. I really didn't. Afro Swing is another one. I think growing up as a Nigerian girl in London and hearing Nigerian music in my house, and then walking into a club X amount of years later and hearing Nigerian music in a club,
that's not
something that a lot of people will be able to say they can do in a world and in a country specifically that their parents aren't from, right? So that for me has been a big eye-opener with this entire series on this podcast, is really understanding the roots of the stuff that I maybe take for granted, I guess, in a way. I don't know, for you guys, is that something that you've realize, and I'm sure you would have done it because you are the black curriculum, but I'm sure there's been moments where you think, wow, I knew it, but I didn't really know it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it keeps evolving as time goes on. You're like, you understand the significance.
So what are you guys listening to now?
I'm going to give two, just off the back of TikTok.
Where's this going?
Flo.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Great girl band.
Yeah.
Beautiful vocals.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's what we need to see. So that's I found them through TikTok though.
Wow.
This immature song that they've been doing rounds on TikTok for. I know the lyrics, but I haven't even heard the full song and I know the
it's
lyrics.
It's embedded in Addy's brain.
I'm going to say Flo.
Yeah.
And then SL.
Yes.
Oh.
I feel like everyone knew him from Gentleman, then he kind of like came back into the scene because of Top Boy and how like Americans found him and stuff. But he's actually been quietly making great music,
I
feel
imagine
personally.
You. Listening to SL.
Annie's about this life.
I feel like there's a different version of her that I can't see or haven't met yet, because what's going on?
No, I know. I thought I was going to say, let me not. But
no, please.
I was going to say both. I'm going to say both. Nux as well. For
okay,
like the last couple years. But
see, I can see you. I can see you listening to Nux.
Yeah,
because Nux can get a bit sexy sometimes. SL.
No, but there's one project. I don't know what it's called, but he's got like the Selhurst 16 thing in the background, the album artwork. I don't know what is it called?
I bet it's called Selhurst.
It probably is. It probably is.
Yeah.
But I just didn't realise how like quietly behind the scenes, or behind my scenes, because I wasn't, he was on my radar for a while. I really enjoy the music.
Cool.
Same.
What about you, Lavinia?
Do you like a bit tropical?
What are you listening to?
Definitely Lil Sims. Like, so yeah. I'm not gonna lie. 2019, people were talking about Lil Sims, and I was like, I'm gonna get there. I'm gonna get there because I'm thinking now what my Spotify playlist is. So I've started this year listening more intentionally to her music.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna lie, I think it's called I See You. That song, it just keeps looping and looping and looping and looping and looping. I love you. I love you, Little Sim. And also Clear Soul.
Yes.
She just takes me somewhere spiritual that I'm just like, I need to be here. This is heaven.
That's an important thing to say as well, that I haven't got there yet. I think we live in a time where it feels like if everyone's listening to it, go listen to it. But sometimes I want to get there in my own time.
Exactly.
And I want to give the music the time that there's no rush to be a fan of someone, right? So I love the idea of that. Cleo Soul was someone for me. So the first album before Mother, it took me a minute to listen to it. I didn't go to the Coco show that she did. Devastated after. I've never had FOMO in the way I had FOMO after that Cleo Soul show, but I didn't get there. But I've made peace with that. It's okay, because when I do hear the music, I'm going to enjoy it more when the time is right. But just from what you guys are saying, even just the variety of people that we've been speaking about, I do feel like Black British music is in a really wonderful place. 100%. I think it's easy to say, oh yeah, music's a bit, you know, it's not as good as it was before, but actually when we really lay these artists out and the music that they're making, it is in a really really good place. Do you guys feel the same? And what would you like to see more of, if anything?
I was gonna say, we haven't touched on like classical or like jazz, but like Chineke Orchestra have been out here. My friend and I went to see them a couple months ago. I was like, if I was 15 in this concert, I would have really enjoyed like my history, even my music classes more, because like in music class, we weren't able to kind of like bring in, I don't know, like Sierra. It was like, you have to learn this like jazz piece. Dun, 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 dun. And I'm just thinking, if I had seen Black people, I probably would have felt more connected to the music. So I feel like, shout out Chineke Orchestra, because they've been really kind of showcasing their talent and work for a long time. And yeah, the Black jazz music scene too. Like, I remember waking up on like Saturday mornings, my mum just plays it in the background. It's like, You don't see it, but you know it's a part of you and your culture. So, I think it's in a good place.
I was going to say, just on jazz, there was a whole thing, I think it was last year or the year before, where there was only a handful of Black or even POC or people of colour jazz musicians on the, I think it was AQA, I don't want to get in trouble, I don't know one it was. Courtney Pine was one of them.
Right.
That you can use to study. It was on the actual syllabus. That got taken down.
Right.
So there was no Black musicians.
Right.
Lots of uproar. They ended up amending it and changing it. And this is why things like this need to be, like, we need to be holding people accountable, because imagine what sort of greatness could have come from that educational experience, like you were saying, if you'd been exposed to that.
Before you guys go, I would love for people who have been listening today, who are inspired by what we've all been talking about, and just want to know more about the Black curriculum, just to understand a little bit more about how they can get involved, what they can do. You mentioned Springboard.
Yes.
Give us a bit of an idea of, if you've heard this, you've listened to the podcast and you think, I want to know more, what is the best thing for someone to do?
Sign up.
So programs-wise, Springboard program, where you get to learn about Black British history through music and poetry. If you are aged 11 to 16, or if you're a parent, guardian, teacher, please sign up. They take place across London, Manchester, Birmingham, Liverpool.
And Bristol.
So there's a free sessions for the day. We've also got our National Ambassador Scheme, which teacher schools, governors, if you are listening, it's basically a package that we offer to schools where young people can learn to be activists within their own communities, whether it's writing like a manifesto, whether it's sort of doing a school presentation. It's using arts to become sort of activists in their own schools.
Mm-hmm. And they get an accreditation at the end that they can
use. It's accredited by an ASDAN, so you can write on your CV for applications, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then other than programmes, do follow us on social media, where we do put out a lot of education resources. So the Black Curriculum on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and then Curriculum Black on Twitter.
Just talking to you, I'm, one, inspired. Two, if I was listening to this, I'd think, who are these women? Where the hell did you come from? You're so knowledgeable, the way you articulate yourselves, the way you speak on what you're passionate about. Just even you talking about getting more into reading and what that meant. Like, I would just love to hear just a tiny, really short, doesn't have to be, you know, your full length bio, but just where were you like before and how did you end up here? This sounds very like, how did you end up here? But give me a little bit about your background.
Okay, cool. So, I grew up in South And for me, education has always been something that I've been passionate about. So I went to SOAS, done African studies, went to New Zealand, got the idea. But, you know, beyond that, I love writing. I really love supporting young people. Mm. And I think seeing that they can do things that I knew others could do but weren't able to do because of their educational limitations that were placed on them. So I feel like I'm very passionate about just making sure that there's access in education. So yeah, I'm writing a book called Omitted. It's going to be out next year. And it's about the Black curriculum and my experience in education as well. So yeah,
amazing.
That's me.
Thank you, Lavinia. What about you, Ali?
So I also went to SOAS. I did history and development studies. And then prior to, I'd loved history from secondary school. No, actually, forget secondary school. Year four, we had to make papyrus, like...
Paper?
It was ancient Egyptians.
Okay, sorry, I'm going to cut you quickly. Anyone who used to watch Art Attack, I actually learned how to make that with the tea stain. And then he made me burn the side of the paper. Neil Buchanan, you are a legend. If I ever get to meet you, I will bow at your feet. You're a legend. But go on, Adi.
No, so year four, we were doing ancient Egyptians. I was like, I want to be an archaeologist. I need to be an archaeologist. Now I know that's problematic, so I'm not going to be able to do that. But before then, and then I was watching The Mummy and all this stuff. I was like, all this history is right before us. Till now, I still kind of think they're fake, even though I'm a historian. Like, the fact that ancient Egyptians existed is still a bit...
You're like, what? What's happening?
But it's history. So then that started then. Went to uni, did history, but lots of African history modules. And then while I was at uni, I did widening participation work. So that was working with young people to get into higher education.
Okay.
And just, I know they used to call me Miss, but I was literally like 3 years older than them. But it was like the satisfaction from spending a week with them, building their trust, seeing them like sort of flourish, meet new people, learn these skills. At the end of it, them saying, thank you, Miss. Like, I want to do this and you taught me this. It was like young people just need to be given the chance and the time.
100%.
And the access. So that was where sort of my relationship with working with young people came from. And then joining the Black curriculum. Yeah.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're both wonderful. Oh. You really are.
The chat could run on and on and on, but we've got to end it somewhere. Massive shouts to Lavinia and Adi for being part of this wrap-up show. Thank you guys so much. So that's it for this series of Sounds of Black Britain. I hope you've learned loads along the way through the sounds and styles of Black British music. Despite the odds, we've always found ways to innovate and to elevate, to tell our truths. Long may it continue. To all the artists we've touched on and talked to throughout the series and the many more we've missed, we send you our deep, heartfelt thank yous for the music and for the memories. The Sounds of Black Britain podcast is brought to you by the Black Curriculum and produced by Unedited. Presented by me, Julie Adenuga. Our executive producer is Andrew Spence. The series producer is Sifa Inchi. Our assistant producers are Akeem Moore-Nickel and Bookie Fadipe. This episode was filmed by JJ Gemio. The series is written by Drew Christie. Our sound designer is Tony Onuchuku.